I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Driven Celebrities podcast. I hope you've had a really special week so far. Now then, let's tell you a little bit about who is going to be on the show this week. Every now and again, well, actually quite a lot, to be honest, because I've had so many lovely conversations. In this job, where I've been able to chat to kind of people of profile and people that have done cool things and people I admire or, you know, whatever it may be, you meet a guest or two who you actually kind of realise, I'd really like to be friends with you, you know. And don't get me wrong, I acknowledge the nature of the connection. You know, oftentimes I'm talking to someone who has something to sell, therefore, you know, it's in their interest to be super bright and smiley with me and maybe laugh a little louder at my rubbishy jokes than they would in real life, and so on. But that said, sometimes you can tell when someone's being genuine and they're just really interesting and really lovely and really cool, etc. And you come away with that feeling, they'd be great as a friend. Not just that was a great conversation, but they'd be great as a friend. Well, this week, you know, that is kind of the case. First up, we have the absolutely lovely Emily Atack, who just kind of giggled and laughed, and I thought she was really cool. And she, rather like, you know, Tom Ellis last week and one or two others, she was kind enough to send me a couple of text messages after the interview, and just, you know, was really lovely, really kind of cool. And I thought, wow, she's very, very nice. You know, and I'm not going to name names here, but sometimes you kind of also learn the ones that aren't very, very nice. You know, you can kind of tell when people are just putting it on. And I obviously always send a thank you message to everybody. But some people, when they don't even acknowledge those messages, and you kind of think, it's not difficult to just send an emoji thumbs up, for example. Anyway, that's by the by. Emily Atack was lovely. So yeah, I'd quite like to be her friend. I thought she was cool. Kelvin Fletcher, star of Emmerdale, and of course the winner of Strictly Come Dancing 2019. He not only is lovely, he is an actual friend of mine. I'm very fortunate. I've known Kelvin for years through the racing scene. I've hosted British GT for the best part of a decade. He won it last year in GT4. He's currently doing my job this year in British GT. I wasn't able to do it for COVID reasons. They're putting lots of precautions in place, but because of various members of my family shielding and so on and so forth, it was just felt that probably wise that I skipped this season. And so the organisers of British GT said to me, well, Andy, who do you want to step in for you for this season? And I was actually with Kelvin the day after we'd had that conversation, and he was so keen and so up for it. I just said, well, how about Kelvin? He's raced in it. He's not racing it this season. He's very good on camera. And I know he's going to race again next season. So, you know, he's not going to steal my job long term, because he's doing a very good job, by the way. Kelvin, if you're listening, do a slightly worse job, please. You're making me look a bit rubbish. Anyway, that's by the by. Good friend of Kelvin's. He's a top, top man. Then my final guest, and the one actually that we're going on longer than we did on the radio with this week, because I promised you a couple of weeks ago that we'll try and give you more than you get from the radio show. My final guest is Gok Wan, who I just thought was absolutely brilliant. I've been watching his new cooking show, and I was able to talk to him about that. And it's such a good cooking show. I mean, I'm a real soft spot for the sort of dishes he's cooking anyway. You know, that's my kind of food. I love what he's cooking. So I'm a sucker for that already. And he was such a friendly, warm, very nice man, including after I'd said goodbye and stuff. He made a real point of, you know, thanking me and being very, very nice and funny. And, you know, he kind of quipped that I could go around to his anytime I'd like for dinner. And I'd be well up for that. The problem is I don't have his number. I was given a PA's number or whatever, so I couldn't text him a thank you. So I thought, oh, I know. You know, randomly, a Facebook suggestion came up, right? So, you know, every now and again, you know, you kind of think your device is listening to you. You know, let's say you're talking about going on holiday to, I don't know, Nice or whatever, just in conversation with someone you're with. And then the next day or so, you start seeing these adverts for holidays to Nice and so on. Well, Facebook suggested that I should be friends with Gok, because Gok is on Facebook apparently, and it was one of those, you know, suggested mates things. So I was like, oh, of course, yeah. So I'll hit request. No reply yet. I still want to be his friend, but he hasn't responded. Anyway, we do go long with Gok longer than we went on the radio show. So extra, I don't know, I think there's about an extra 20 minutes with Gok Wan, as well as these lovely chats with Emily Atack and Kelvin Fletcher. That's your podcast for this week. It's the Driven Celebrities podcast with me, Andy J. We really appreciate when you spread the word, when you like or review or share. And if you can say nice things, that'd be amazing. If you'd like to post about it on your social media, that'd be amazing. You know, we've got a huge back catalogue of celebrities in our armoury now, and yet we're still very new and very young. We've only been doing this for a few weeks. So the more people that help spread the word, the better. And now that you've listened, I'm hoping you've listened to more than one. And if you've made it into 5 minutes of me waffling, well, good on you. Let's get into the celebrities, shall we? Thanks for your company today, and let's dive in.
Driven with Andy J on Talk Radio, in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Hey there, welcome to Driven here on Talk Radio. I'm Andy J. This is the show that likes to talk to celebrities and achievers about what drives them. And today, we've got a really lovely selection of guests for you. First up, she's an extremely funny lady. She captured the hearts of the nation, well, for many things she's done in her career, but not least because she was just such a star on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, the glorious Emily Atack. She is our first guest for the show. Then a man who in 2019 showed us that he's not just an extremely talented actor and very decent racing driver, incidentally. He's also got snake hips. I'm talking about Strictly Come Dancing 2019 winner, Mr. Kelvin Fletcher. And my last guest is a man who I've been wanting to talk to for ages because he's just had such a varied career. And I've got to say, he just comes across as incredibly likable in everything he does. The magnificent Gok Wan. This is Driven with me, Andy J.
Driven with Andy J on Talk Radio, in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Now listen, laughter has never been more important, and here to tell us why is someone that I'm genuinely thrilled to be able to speak to. She's a presenter, she's a comedian, she's an actor, and she's basically phenomenal. I'm already in love with her. It's Emily Atack. How are you doing, Emily?
Introduction, thank you so much.
Well, it's also all true. I think you're wonderful.
Oh my god, I think you're wonderful. Thank you so much. How lovely.
Emily, you're a bringer of joy. You know, you've lit up our lives for a long, long time across many different guises.
That is such a sweet thing to say. Well, my whole life, I've always kind of just, I've been taught to not take life too seriously, don't take yourself too seriously. And well, this is why I've teamed up with Laughing Cow, which also, by the way, I think is a perfect name for me. I'm always encouraging people to laugh in the face of adversity, and I think particularly right now it's really, really important. You know, and I've learned in this research with working with Laughing Cow, 79% of Brits have turned to laughter throughout lockdown, and I think that's a really, really lovely thing.
I mean, isn't it great? You know, it's I guess that's the British spirit as well, isn't it? You know, sometimes we just kind of sometimes we Brits get a bit lambasted for our kind of damn bastard's attitude, but actually the ability to laugh is something we're all pretty good at.
It so is, and I growing up my whole life, I was the girl always getting in trouble for giggling in the classroom and giggling in assembly and teachers telling me off, but I always knew that laughter is so important in so many ways. It's good, it's so important for your mental health. So yeah, that was the excuse I used to my teachers, but I'm sorry, I'm doing it for my mental health.
It's great. No, it's absolutely the right thing. I've got to pick you up, though. You are, I don't know why you called yourself the Laughing Cow. That couldn't be further from the truth. I randomly heard that you had described yourself as well as, what was it now? Something to do with a mermaid?
Naughty mermaid. I am like a naughty mermaid. Well, I love mermaids. I wore this really sort of sparkly blue dress yesterday, and I felt like a naughty mermaid. I think with me, because I am very naughty, and I'm very mischievous, I always have to add those kind of words before anything that I do. So yeah, I am naughty. I'm very giggly. I think I'll always be that way.
Just for confirmation on the mermaid thing, it's about a dress. You haven't grown gills and a tail.
No, I haven't gone that mad in lockdown. But you know, there's still time.
That would have been quite a claim to fame, Emily. It would have been pretty nuts. You are uniquely placed to be able to talk to us about survival, actually, I suppose is the sort of slightly more crucial term of this. You know, we've all kind of experienced our own truths or whatever during lockdown and the strangeness of 2020. But, you know, if we look at your life prior to this year, you know, you've had many different battles in many different ways, and we have seen you come out on top.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm so lucky that the people I have around me, I've got an amazing friends, amazing family, and I really like to show in life. I really challenge myself, and I always like to kind of, I think initially people sort of have me down as a slight, you know, blonde airhead type, and I love to break that stereotype and prove people wrong. Yeah, I think by laughing my way through everything, that's how I've kind of got through things, you know, with my friends and family. I did the same thing in the jungle, really. You know, I think the jungle was a time that I've been reflecting on a lot during lockdown, because I mean, obviously it was a very different situation, but you know, when you're in there, you're very deprived of the things that normally bring you joy in life, your friends and family and food and wine. Yeah, you have to kind of revert to minimalistic things, and laughing in there was all we had. Laughter was all we had, and we just laughed and laughed and laughed, and we made up dance routines and we sang, and it kind of really just brought us, you know, you go back to basics, you're stripped of everything. I often find that when I am sort of challenged in that way, I am a survivor, and I do come out on top, and I seem to surprise myself, and I, you know, surprise my parents. I think it does kind of make you stronger in the end.
Oh my God, Emily, let's hear some of your impressions. That's so funny. Come on.
Who's the one that was
Danny!
I'm
Jack! Yes, I love Jack! Yeah. Jack! Oh my God, at the end of the day, right? He thinks he's going to make me cheese and ham croissant every morning. Like, I do love the boy, but like, things got to change around here. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, Ruth Langsford.
Oh, I love Ruth.
Because we've got James Arthur coming in. He's going to sing us a song. He's going to sing. And I know I like singing songs, but Amy doesn't let me sing songs. Hey, shut your mouth, you dirty guy.
Emma Collins.
At the end of the day, darling, I'm the GC.
Yeah.
Such a lovely watch, that series. You know, sometimes, you know, you must have seen these as well in previous years. Sometimes it's a bit of an uncomfortable watch when there's just tension and horrible and nasty. But, you know, whenever you were on the screen, everything was just lovely and happy and everything was fine. You know, it was just a nice, rewarding.
I was so lucky. I was lucky. The people that I had in there, oh my God. Like, and it was so genuine as well. I don't think we didn't share a crossword in there. I think, you know, I was completely blessed with that, my time in there. It was just magical. It was complete magic. I don't know what I did in life to deserve such an amazing experience. And yeah, as I say, I've just been reflecting on it so much. I've actually watched a few YouTube clips of it to get me through this lockdown period, just
That's
to remember,
lovely.
You know. Yeah, it reminds me of who I really am and the person that was in the jungle. You know, I sometimes struggle to find that person in the real world because, you know, the real world brings so much kind of, it brings more trials, tribulations and challenges. And I think when you're in there, I kind of felt like I could escape all of that. And it really did help me escape it. And I look back with such fond memories. So actually YouTubing some videos of us in there has been really lovely, kind of reminding myself who I really am and how strong I can be.
And you raise a really interesting point, actually, because it's, you know, sometimes we have to remember who we are. You know, sometimes people get carried away in a circumstance or a situation or something dramatic in their lives, you know, a breakup, you know, a relative unwell or whatever, and you know, a job going wrong, and it becomes what defines them, and they forget who
completely.
They are.
Yeah, it consumes you, doesn't it? And I think with something like this, with lockdown and everybody being missing their friends and their families, and we've all been, everybody's been literally fearing for their lives. I think it's hopefully going to be the only situation we know in our lifetime where the whole world has had to come together. The whole world is in the same boat and we're all desperate to find the joy in things again. And I think that in these kind of times, you know, just even going on online, going on the internet and seeing all these funny videos of families doing, you know, TikTok together and girlfriends trying to cut their boyfriend's hair and, you know, hilarious things that we've seen, and also real acts of kindness that have been going on. And I think all those things have just been so important to get us through, and it really has kind of brought us all together. And weirdly, even though we've all been apart in lockdown, it's kind of made us more connected than ever, strangely.
This is going to sound like I've made it up because we're talking, but it's actually true. One of the ways that I've got through it, I've re-watched The In-Betweeners, which, of course, you're a big, big part of. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, that will make you laugh, won't it? And, you know, I think if you've got that kind of very crude sense of humour, which I hope you do, because
absolutely.
I think it's important to have a crude sense of humour, I think watching your favourite comedies is a really good tip to get you through. But yeah, I mean, maybe I'm going to have to rewatch some of the in-betweeners and fun memories.
You have had sex before, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, loads. I've done it with two different girls.
I've had 11 lovers already.
Five girls, actually. Sorry, it was five, not two.
You're right, stud. Who were they then?
Well, there's a girl I met in Australia.
Australia?
Yep, I went there on holiday.
When was that?
2005.
So you were 13?
I was very mature for my age.
Oh, older woman then, was she?
No, she was a couple years younger, actually.
So she was 11?
I mean, what's it like for you? Because obviously that was an acting gig. You know, watching yourself back in the jungle, that's you watching yourself, remembering who you are. How do you feel when you watch yourself acting? You know, you're not playing you, you're playing the words that someone else has written and the character.
Yeah, you know what? Because it's been quite a long time since I've watched myself acting, I don't know how it would feel now because, I'm so used to sort of, you know, I've presented things and I've been showing people who I am as a person a lot more recently. I'd love to get my teeth back into acting again and do that. And yeah, it would be interesting actually to see myself playing a role, a different character again. But you know, watch this space because there's a lot going on. I'm not allowed to talk about a very particular thing at the moment, but I'm so excited to talk about it. What I can say is that I'm, you know, in the process of writing something and it's going to be great. And as soon as I'm allowed to release what that is, I'll 100% come back to you.
Now that is really exciting, Emily. That's like, whenever someone like you says, watch this space, it means something really cool is happening. It's so cool.
It's so cool. Honestly, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I'm not allowed to say it, but it's so cool. And I'm so lucky, you know, I'm going through a phase in life at the moment. Everybody's kind of allowing me to dip my toe into all these sort of different areas of the industry. And it's so fun. And I hope as lockdown eases and everybody is getting safe and well again, we can just start enjoying, you know, we need to save the theatres, save the arts. Yeah. We need to save live comedy. I've got a tour that is unfortunately going to have to be postponed as much as I've held on to it as long as I can, but we've got new dates coming. So people that have bought tickets, you won't be disappointed. We've got some dates coming for next year. And yeah, we need to just get safe and well again, and then we can all start enjoying the industry again, enjoying the arts again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Emily, you're sort of saying there's this kind of lots of opportunities forming at the moment. And I would propose that is partly because there is so much goodwill. You know, now that you have had the opportunity to show who you are to the world, you know, it's not just the industry that are interested because you're a celebrity and everything, but it's actually people like you because you're you, you're real, you're open, you're honest, you're true. You know, that's a huge thing.
Oh, that's so sweet. I mean, I've always been, my main thing is that I want to show people who I am. I let people in, and it's sometimes been a bit of a downfall in my life because I sometimes give people a bit too much. I'm quite a giving person, and it can, you know, it can be to detriment at times. But I thought, well, why not use that in a positive way and do a show like The Jungle where you can really, really let people, you bare your soul, really. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I've always been that way. And I wanted to just kind of turn that into a positive rather than, you know, letting it be something negative in my life. The response has just been unbelievable. I'm so lucky and fortunate that, you know, people kind of warmed to me and people, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, I really want to go to the pub with you. You look like you'd have a great time at the pub.
Yeah.
And I'm not being funny. That is so true. Let's do a conga to the pub.
I am so down for that. Do you know, that's the quickest way to get through a crowd is start a conga line. That's what I've learned.
It is, isn't it? I mean, let's do a socially distanced conga, shall we?
I'm so there. I mean, the other thing, Emily, is by being this open, by being this real with people, you control the narrative, don't you? No one's able to twist and kind of create a different version of you.
Do you know what? I've really learned that. I've learned that if I'm just really open about the things that people could potentially turn into a negative, like, for example, you know, I talk about going to the pub a lot. I talk about, you know, the fact how much I love wine, how much I love cheese, how much I love eating, and all these things that sometimes can be seen as a negative. I really, really open about them so that if somebody does pick up on me, you know, drinking wine or eating a burger and, you know, it becomes a bit of a thing. I'm like, well, yeah, I already told you that I do that. It's no news to anyone that I like a drink and I like a burger.
And who doesn't love a drink and a burger? Thank you to Emily Atack. Now then, from the Queen of the Jungle to the King of the Ballroom. After the break, I'm joined by Twinkle Toes himself, Kelvin Fletcher.
Driven with Andy J on Talk Radio in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
I'm very pleased to be able to welcome my next guest. Now,
If I was to list off my next guest's achievements, it would probably take the duration of this interview. So instead, I'm just going to say a very warm welcome to a really special man. It's Mr. Kelvin Fletcher. How are you doing, Kelvin?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
I wanted to ask you how you would like to be introduced.
That was great. It was, I don't know how true that is. As regards to achievements go, there's only a couple I can really think of.
Oh, yeah, a couple of massive standouts. Well, do you know why I started with that? Because you may not want me to say he's just won Strictly Come Dancing, because you might be like, yeah, but I'm more than that. You may not want me to say he was in Emmerdale for 1,000 years, because you might be like, yeah, I haven't done that for a while. You may not want me to say British GT champion, because, you know, racing's been suspended for a bit and new season starts and we don't know how you're going to end this season, etc. Yeah. So do you see what I mean? Some, like X Factor contestants, don't want you to reference it after a couple of years.
Well, I'm proud of all my achievements in that sense. So the ones you mentioned there, I've got no issues with you mentioning them, because I'm very proud of them. Emmerdale is a huge part of, was a huge part of my life, so naturally that's always going to be mentioned. And 20 years, you know, I was there, you know, from being a young boy and to a young man, really. So it's another huge part of my life.
Now I've got a brother.
Hey.
Thanks, everybody. This is the best present I've ever had, and it's the happiest day of my life.
As a racing driver, that's something that started out as a hobby that somewhat became another profession, another career. Extremely proud of that, and especially last year to have been, you know, crowned the champion. And Strictly, most recently, as a double champion, because I won obviously the TV show, and then yeah. I won the live studio arena tour as well. Again, three very different things. I'm not a dancer, I am an actor, and I wasn't a racing driver. I've managed to kind of tick the box of all three. So, yeah, you know, something I'm very proud of. Yeah, hopefully my successes will continue. But behind those successes, I'm sure you'll be aware, there's millions and millions of failures, you know, yeah. And that's part and parcel of the process. So people kind of only see the successes, but, you know, let me tell you, there's a lot of failures. You know, currently at the minute, I fail at many things, and that's for me. I've built a resilience from being a young kid, and failure is just, it's not rejection, it's simply redirection. And that's right. Why, you know, I find myself being redirected, you know, even now currently on the back of such success, as you mentioned, I still get a lot of redirection, I like to call it, and it just makes me more ambitious and more determined to go on and strive and kind of continue to hopefully be successful. I started acting when I was 6 years old, yeah. with no real aspirations other than it was a hobby. It was something that I just loved to do as a kid, you know, to pretend to be somebody else, to improvise. I went to a local theatre group, and that was it really, with no grand ambitions. At the time, I wanted to be a mechanic. That was what my dad was. My dad was a diesel fitter working on trucks. And like most young kids, I wanted to follow in the footsteps of my dad. And I went to bed with a spanner in my hand as a 3 or 4 year old. So my whole notion of career was hands-on, you know, academic. I was pretty good at school, but I was very much a you know, hands-on guy. And I wanted to follow my father's footsteps and be a mechanic. So
yeah,
me doing a bit of drama at the local theater group, that became my you know, a career that I didn't realise I would ever kind of undertake. So to have been on TV since I started Emmerdale when I was 12 years old. I'd already had kind of a pretty prolific career as a child actor prior to that. So I'd been on TV a lot.
Yeah.
I'd worked all around the world. I'd worked in America, I'd worked in South Africa on commercials and various bits and bobs. So I was a pretty experienced, you know, like I said, my dad was juggling two or three jobs at the time. My mum was doing the same. We lived in a pretty, you know, two up, two down. We didn't have a lot, but I was surrounded by absolute support and love, in a sense of my wildest dreams were always, if I rang my mum now and said, "Mum, I'm going to be a prime minister," she would, yeah, yeah. She, you know, she's just got this, she's just my biggest support network, really. And I guess that's invaluable for children. Growing up material-wise, you might not have an awful lot, but to have that sense of belief and sense of encouragement that you can literally go out and achieve whatever you want, however much of a gimmick that sounds.
No, it's true, though.
It really resonates with me. And being on TV as a kid is something that I quickly became used to, and it became the norm, weirdly.
Yeah.
But I had this amazing, for me, I was so grateful because I was in a very normal, unassuming working-class environment at home that I didn't get above my stations, because it was a great privileged position to be in. I was lucky, but it could all end like that. And I was just this normal kid from Oldham. And, you know, still to this day, that's how I kind of look at things. You know, I work extremely hard, and I've been in some crazy, as yourself, some crazy situations with amazing people, that people that you look up to.
Yeah.
And you mix in those sort of circles. But it, you know.
But there comes a point where you sort of take that for granted as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, because
because those are your colleagues, those are your, they become your friends, you know, people that you may have, people of profile that you may have seen or been aware of or just thought, hey, they're cool or not. And then suddenly you're in a show with them or you're dancing next to them or whatever it might be. And you know, you spend more than half an hour with someone and you get a connection with them. You kind of, the starstruck only lasts for the first 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, no, and I think it's important to always remember that they're all, you know, we're all human beings, you know, and regardless of what somebody has achieved, how great or, you know, grand that might be, at the end of the day, you know, I've met just as, if not more interesting people who run the local butty shop that I find just as fascinating. I've got just as, their story is just as valid as the next man's story who's got a 30-year career spanning from music and whatnot, you know. So everybody's got a story, you know, and yeah, I've been gifted to meet some amazing people who have succeeded so much, but it's what you deem as success, you know. Having a happy marriage, having a happy life, and exploring the world is successful. It doesn't have to be that you've got an array of cars and properties and, you know, great awards to, you know, to show your success. I think success is in many forms, and hopefully I've got a little bit of success in all kind of walks of life, a little bit of career success as an actor, and a little bit of real life success, you know, with being surrounded by people that I, you know, feel immensely grateful to have them in my life, my family and my wife and stuff like that.
So. What a lovely way to look at the world, Kelvin, and that's why, you know, you're going to go on to continue to do great things in whatever field I think you choose, because you have this grounded mental approach which is so bang on. You know, I mean, I've been fortunate in my career and in this show to meet some people whose material success is ridiculous, unbelievable. You know, we've seen some phenomenal properties and garages full of priceless cars and this, that and the other. And certain people, I'll keep their identities to myself because it would be unkind not to, but certain people
off
I
camera,
have found,
I'll ask you.
Yeah, sure. But like I have found that some of these people that can list these phenomenal achievements and this great vast wealth actually are still carrying a sadness around. You know, that's not what I would describe as success, because it doesn't have happiness attached. Busy and wealthy doesn't equal happy.
No, and for some people it does, you know, for some people at that.
I'm not sure it does though, mate.
No?
I'm not sure it does, because when you hit a certain, let's say 10 million quid, right? When you've got 10 million quid in the bank and you don't have necessarily a supportive family or you know, really close friends or whatever, and you've had to really work for that 10 million quid, it's then about making 100.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
It's
not,
void,
that's not enough.
Because
that's what your target has been.
Yeah.
It hasn't been, well, I'll bank 10 million quid, but I'll have some amazing memories along the way and I'll have a fantastic family and I'll be healthy and happy and mentally sorted. That doesn't seem to be the approach. It doesn't seem to be, what you're saying is the hand in glove. It's like, well, yeah, I've got some career success, sure, but actually success is having my family, having my wife, staying grounded, being aware of the people that are in my life that aren't people of profile per se.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of people forget that. Mm. A lot of people forget that.
Well, I guess I'm still still learning in many ways. You know, I'm 36, but I still feel very young and very, very naive in some aspects that I still want to learn. I've got a real appetite to learn and I feel like there's a lot I need to learn still. But then in many other ways, you know, I feel that I've worldly wise in many ways, because I guess as a young professional, as a 7 or 8 year old, I was on TV sets with some incredibly successful and famous adults.
Yeah.
So kind of being in tune as a child actor, being expected to behave like an adult, to be there on time, to know your line, but yet still treated as a minor, because I was a minor, you know, spoken down to, if not, you know, and not be privy to certain chats and know that you're kind of, you're creating the awkwardness by being there, being the younger person. And I think it's an amazing experience to have, because you become quite a well-rounded person. But, you know, I'm still in development, I guess, you know, there's still this, I am happy and I feel like I've got a you know, a grasp of success in many ways, but I'm still driven. I still, you know, great pun there for the show.
Love it.
But no, I still want to achieve things. There's certain things in all facets of life. As a father, as a husband, as a friend, I still like I can still give more, and you know, and that can still be improved a little bit. As an actor, I want to achieve more. I want to do a film. There's some theatre I want to do. There's certain roles, there's certain genres I want to do. Those boxes still yet have to be ticked, and I absolutely want to tick those boxes. As a racing driver, I want to win a GT3 championship. That's my first and foremost goal. You know, that's the first thing I want to secure, and I'm confident that I will do that. So all these things I'm confident in, but I've chosen careers that despite, no matter how good I am at them, and no matter how hard I work, and you'll be able to relate to this, is it's out of my control. I'm at the mercy of other people's decisions.
Yeah.
And albeit, a lot of the time, subjective decisions as well. So it can be quite frustrating, you know. And
there'll never be anything to do with you. So I want to remind you of a conversation we had. It was in the pit lane at British GT, and you had just got the call. You were coming in to Strictly Come Dancing, which you came into late. You know, it was on, and then it was a question mark, and then Jamie Lang was in, and then he got injured. So you were effectively at the 11th hour, parachuted in. We were kind of sort of saying, this could be really interesting for your career. You know, that was the angle that we had. We didn't discuss the dancing so much. That was more a kind of joke at the time. But, you know, I think I was saying to you, you know, Kelvin, that show is massive. You know, it's not that people have forgotten you on any level, but people, you'll be right in the public eye, and there'll be casting agents and whatnot. They're like, well, hang on, Kelvin's, you know, he's doing well in the old shiny shirts, but we've got to get him in a show.
Yeah.
And you were kind of saying to me, yeah, but I want to win it. You were using that language, and I genuinely thought, come on, Kelv, you don't want to win it. You just want to be in it for a few. I think I said, get to, you know, at least hang in for the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And you were kind of like, no, I appreciate that, but I've got slightly bigger ambitions.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like it kind of got taken away from this could be an interesting career thing to, I'm going to win this show.
Yeah. In a sense of, when I say win, I guess with what I meant, in my version of winning, not necessarily being crowned champion as such, is applying myself how I know the potential I've got.
Yeah.
Not as a dancer, but anything I do, I'll give it my absolute all and I exhaust myself and I'll fail and I'll succeed, you know, whichever way. But that's what I meant to go out. I wanted to go out there and win in a sense of I wanted to give it my all. I knew people wouldn't expect what they saw. I've never danced before. I've always had a great relationship with music. I feel like I've got a bit of natural rhythm, a natural groove, and I'm confident. So I knew I had some skill set to these athletes on that show. There's presenters. There's all different types of genres and professions. As an actor, you've got you should have an ability to lose your inhibitions.
Yeah.
And willing to expose yourself. The minute you can be free and embody that character, that dance, whatever it might be, out of your comfort zone, if you can tell that story convincingly, then that's part of it. And I knew
Absolutely.
I could do that.
Yeah.
And I knew that people would be watching, having seen me play a farmer on Emmerdale for 20 years, or might not have seen me, you know, might not know who I am. So they've never really seen the real me.
Right.
And I knew that in some way could be a revelation, and I was confident thinking, well, a normal guy, I'd like to think that I'm pretty relatable to most people. And, and that is, I think, is a value. But when it came to winning, I knew that in doing that show, I was going to give it my all. If we was training 12, 13, 14 hours a day I was training, you know, I've never worked so hard.
Yeah.
I absolutely gave it my all. And I guess it paid off, you know, in the sense of danced as best I could. I just kind of was enjoying the ride, you know, enjoying the unknown. It wasn't in my control. Again, with my audition, I could go into an audition, give it my all.
Yeah.
But unless that casting director likes me or not, then same True. With the audience. They picked up the phone and voted for me, and I wasn't in control of that. Maybe they liked my dancing. Maybe they thought I was a likable guy. It was out of my control, so I took great. I was kind of reassured with that, thinking, well, it's not really in my hands. I'll give everything I can give, and I'm confident that what I can give is going to be all of me. And whether if that means week 6, week 10 in the final, then, you know.
You didn't give the public a chance, Kelvin. You didn't give the public a chance.
Well,
you know, not only were you a phenomenal dancer, but they got to see the you that I've met, which is this genuine, really lovely bloke.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone saw that. You didn't just get voted as the victor because your hips are insane, which they are, but because you're a really lovely man, and that's what the nation got to see, and that was what voted for. Not that your competitors weren't lovely people, but it was very apparent that you're just a real you're a proper bloke.
Yeah, well, I guess that was probably in the back of there's so much redirection as such, and that's always, I guess, with me, that, you know, when you're having these amazing opportunities, you're genuinely grateful and just loving every minute. There's a competitive side. Yeah, I want to do my best here. You know, if you don't want to do your best, if you don't want to win, not necessarily win because it's out of your control, you don't decide that, but if you don't want to give yourself completely, then fair enough, but that's not me. Whatever I do, I want to give it my all. With that sort of mindset, you will fail and you will succeed. It's as simple as that. I've had that same mindset in 10 different things. And Strictly was the ones that I succeeded in. There's quite a few that I've not succeeded. I've had the same sort of determination, the same sort of confidence, the same sort of belief that I can really do well at this. And I've not done. That's just part and parcel of it.
Let's talk about that public spike. Because now, obviously, you're back properly. Everyone is remembering you. And there's this great fondness and affection for you. Like you say, you were voted for, and hundreds of thousands, millions of people would have picked up the phone for you over the course of that show. Has there been a translation in terms of bookings, the phone ringing, people saying, Kelvin, can we just see you for, can we come and have a chat? You want to have a coffee with? You know, what's been the spin-off since?
So where were you 6 months ago? As soon as the show finished, I think I went on holiday for 2 weeks with the family and then came back and we had this live arena tour, which again was like 5-6 intense weeks. And it was a little bit, you know, there was no real jeopardy. The TV show, you could go, you didn't want to go home, you wanted to stay in the competition because it was such an amazing experience. In the arena tour, you're doing the same dance with the same group of people, you know, socialising, drinking together, partying together, you're getting to know one another. People are paying tickets to go for, you know, they've got 10,000 people in Manchester Arena where I've seen bands play. I've gone to the O2, I've gone to all these cities and I'm performing there.
Yeah.
Albeit doing my little samba, but I'm thinking this, I feel like a rock star. This is just, this is weird. Yeah. What am I doing?
Yeah.
And so it's humbling. It's, you can't help but feel a great, huge sense of gratitude, but at the same time, not let your head down a little bit, but I'd worked so hard the previous 4 months on the show.
Yeah.
It was kind of like...
A little bit party time.
But at the same time, people had paid money to go and see it. And we got into this thing where I think there was 30 shows, and I don't know why, but the champion from the TV show never wins the arena tour. It's just never really happened. I think it's happened once or twice in the 17 years.
Yeah.
Maybe the public's affection then thinks, oh, well, they've won the TV show, let's give the... Because on the night, the audience votes on the phone, you see, for who they want.
Perfect.
So, every, you know, we're doing matinee performances and evening performances. 2 or 3 days in Manchester, then on to the next town, then on to the next town. And
excellent.
So over the duration of the 4 or 5 week tour, you would have done 30 shows. And probably a third of the way into it, I've won every single show so far.
I'm not going to want to be any of the other dancers.
Well, and I could see people like some of the couple of little jokes amongst everyone. And that I started to cringe a little bit thinking, oh, I feel guilty for... And then I thought, well, these people have seen the show for the first time.
Yeah.
And if they just vote for me and
it's not the same audience, is it?
And it's not, you know, I can't think about myself because I've got to show how grateful I am for their benefit. They just voted for me. So amongst all of that, another kind of craziness, I think it was only a week or two after that then is when we kind of felt the spike, you know, when the agents were calling and producers, and I had that many meetings. I do a lot of writing as well. I had a drama that I'd wrote and a couple of documentary ideas, and suddenly they were kind of now coming to fruition, where, you know, these networks and things looking to put those on. Not necessarily me in front of the camera, a couple of projects I'm behind the camera, and you know, I've always wanted to direct things. So that's opened up a vast array of opportunities. And you take these because these are some of the same people that a year ago, 2 years ago, I had approached and they didn't want to know, and suddenly they want to know, you know. And that's part and parcel
of it.
I don't mind.
Though,
and so be it. And then obviously, as everyone would have felt, COVID hit. And that's kind of just pressed the pause button on a lot of projects. So a lot of frustrations there because I had such a good momentum to then go into something. And it was a whole standstill for, you know, 3 or 4 months. So we're now coming out of that now, hopefully, fingers crossed. And you know, we will resume with, hopefully, a newfound momentum and see where it goes.
Exactly. I think there's big things to come. You're not saying too much, but I'm getting the sense there's a couple of things in the pipeline, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's towards the back end of this year, we've got some exciting things coming up. And then I think 2021 is a real key year for me, I think, with... you know, there'll be not a lot of new projects where me in a new domain, you know, first and foremost as an actor, but there's other stuff there where I'm making my directorial debut. And I'm looking forward to all that. It's exciting.
Brilliant.
And hopefully to showcase, you know, some more areas of the little bit of talent that, you know, that I've got. You know, I've always, like I say, you know, comedy is a huge part of my pastime. You know, I love comedy sketches and stuff like that. And I've always wrote comedy sketches for years and years. I've never really had anywhere to put. I put the odd little show on here and there, but never on a scale where the public would know, if you like.
Yeah.
So now, if I've got this opportunity to show that, then so yeah, as whether it's a producer, director, a writer, or as an actor, then I'm, I want to.
You're going to do the whole lot, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll do a little bit. Yeah.
I'm reading between the lines here. Tell me if I'm wrong, but you're going to do a comedy series which will star you, be produced by you, and be directed by you. Am I close?
No, I don't know if I could do that, you know, because that was one of the options.
Write the theme tune, sing the theme tune.
I've got to be careful of what I take on because, you know, I think whatever I do, I want to execute.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be confident in directing something and acting in it as well.
Okay.
And writing, you know, those all, there's quite crucial elements there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't feel I've got the experience currently to kind of go and absolutely nail that. So I would maybe take a little step back, make sure I nail one or two, and then with the hope that going forward, I will be at a point where
I'm going to press you off camera about this. This is, I need to hear more. What I will ask is, when this is in the public domain, whatever it is that's coming next, and I'm thrilled that there is something that's coming next, by the way. This is really good news. I would have been very frustrated if you'd won and then COVID had hit and that was that, you know. Because don't get me wrong, you're great in a race car, but we need to see you on the screen as well.
Yeah.
It's important. Can we come back and chat then?
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
Looking forward to catching up with Kelvin Fletcher again really soon. Now, after the break, I'm joined by your third member of chat show royalty, the wonderful Gok Wan, joins me on Driven here on Talk Radio.
Driven with Andy J on Talk Radio in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
It's Driven here on Talk Radio with me, Andy J. Now, I'm elated to be able to welcome my next guest, a man who we know for a myriad of different things, but his latest TV show, well, I've seen it, and basically, I now want to be his best friend. I'm thrilled to say, joining me on the line, it's Gok Wan. How you doing, Gok?
Hi, Andy. Really well, thank you. And do you know what? I accept your offer of best friendship.
Yay!
I definitely, it's going to happen. I do warn you, I am a feeder, and you will have to consume a lot of Asian food.
Well, all of these things are massive box tickets for me, Gok. I have plenty of space to be fed, and I'm a huge fan of Asian food.
So, thank you very much.
Bring it on. Match made in heaven, Gok. I must say, so your new show, Gok Wan's Easy Asian, you can see it on the Food Network, it's available on Dplay. It is such a joyful show. I've seen a lot of it now. I've loved it, Gok.
Thank you. You're very sweet. You know, it was never, ever to be intended to be like this. This is the funny thing. All of us have had a very tough year. Lockdown affected all of us very differently. Me, I had a terrible time with that. I hated it. I hated everything that happened.
Really?
But when we were talking about making Easy Asian, you know, cooking in the street, very, very Floyd-esque. And then because of lockdown, we decided that what we would do is we would then go into the kitchen, into my kitchen in particular. So we filmed it all at home. And you would normally have about 24 people working on a show like that, a chop and cook show.
Yes.
And we had just four of us. And so we were doing every single role, from the food styling, the photography, obviously the filming, hair, makeup, production, home ec work. And what it did is it created the most beautiful environment that was intimate and sensitive and personal. So it's just a really lovely series of great dishes, gorgeous food, full of anecdotes. And because I was missing, and I still am actually, but because I was really missing my friends and my family because of lockdown, it allowed me to communicate with them and tell their stories and tell my stories. And we kind of broke down the fourth wall of television. And that would never have happened if we weren't in lockdown. So as much as I hate lockdown and I hate the situation we're in, we actually created a really beautiful show that we would never have got if we weren't given those restrictions.
Yes,
and I think that's why it's so joyful, because it's very sensitive and very emotional.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, Gok, because certainly when I was watching it, I felt like I was having this very personal, intimate experience with you, getting to hear your anecdotes, seeing you smell the food and it capturing a memory for you, etc. And certainly one of the things I found hosting an interview show, you know, which we started during lockdown, is how open celebrities have been, whereas they may have been a little more guarded, you know, pre-lockdown.
Yeah.
People want to talk.
Yeah, they really do. And I think all of us, when you have your civil liberties taken away from you and you have your freedom and obviously your friends and your family and work, when all of that goes away, you kind of then have to sit within your own world. Mm. And it's very introspective, isn't it? Because you sit there and you analyze every single part of it. And I think that need to communicate and the need to want to discuss things and let down your guard slightly. And I have a theory for this, Andy. And I might be wrong,
okay. But
this is just my theory. For a very, very split second, every single one of us were equal. So regardless of whether we were, you know, the sultan of, you know, a beautiful, amazing, you know, country, or whether we were a king or a queen or, you know, a movie star, a football player, every single one of us was completely equal for a split second.
Yes.
And that had a huge effect on all of us and how we behave and how we speak. And I think that is what happened through lockdown, is that every single one of us have turned around and said, you know what, actually, this is me, this is what I'm about, and we are. And it definitely made me far more open. And not that I'm that much of a guarded person, but things like my home and some stories about my family, I don't think I would have discussed them on TV before, but because I was so desperate to see my friends and my family, and because I felt confident enough and secure enough that it just kind of came out, and we've captured it all on film and in this series. And I doubt I'll ever make another series like that again. I don't know whether I would have that intimacy. And it is all down to lockdown. It's an odd one, isn't it? Because I think we're starting to see the positives now, because it's been so negative for so many months that I think we're starting to look and go, oh, actually, you know what? I've managed to do my garden. Or actually, I've managed to reconnect with that person that I probably wouldn't have spoken to before. Or I've managed to make a TV show and tell all those personal stories. You know, however it comes out in you, I think we're starting to see how we have changed and how our lives have changed. And we're starting to look for the positivities there.
You're so right. You're absolutely on the money, Gok. And it's one of those things where, hey, listen, if this show has come out of lockdown, lockdown is a positive, because it's this show is a bringer of joy. I realise I'm kind of...
No, you know, thank you.
Well, it just is. You know, it's one of those things when I saw, you know, why I was going to be able to talk to you, I was like, oh, brilliant, brilliant. Okay, a cooking show. All right. And I was kind of expecting, because, you know, I'm sure everyone knows about your childhood. You were brought up, you know, working in a Chinese restaurant, your parents' Chinese restaurant, I believe.
Yeah.
So I think that's a known thing. You know, it's no surprise that you're doing cooking. But I did sort of wonder, what is this going to be like, a Jamie Oliver or Gordon Ramsay or whatever, where you basically guide us through the recipes and we'll learn to cook out of the end of it, which in part it is. But it's so much more than that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. You know, also, the other beauty of this show was that I was allowed to choose every single one of the recipes. So, you know, we had an amazing producer, Karen, an amazing home ec, a guy called Karim, but they allowed me, you know, carte blanche, really, on the stuff that I wanted to cook. Mm-hmm. And so, again, you're not only getting an intimate look into my life growing up in a Chinese restaurant with my family through all the stories, you're not only being then invited into my kitchen to make the food and cook the food, and you know, be given guidance but not instruction, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can watch something where you feel like you've just been dictated to, you've got to follow it by the, you know, by the book. Well, this show isn't about that. It's like, add it if you want it. If you don't want it, just take it out. You know, you can do what you want with this. So I suppose, almost like with fashion, I suppose, you do as much as you can to make you feel confident. But I think on top of all of that, then you've got these incredible recipes that I've picked up over the years from traveling around Asia and, you know, and learn from friends and learn from my dad and stuff that I've developed myself. And so I think all of that rolled into one space is just a really, really nice, easy watch, and delicious, and really, really delicious, gorgeous, simple Asian food. A lot of people also think that Asian food is very complex because of the ingredients and how you cook it, and, you know, maybe different utensils that you wouldn't use in a Western kitchen. But actually, when you strip all of that back, then what you're left with is just delicious food that's very easy to cook, as long as you know the principles and as long as you know some of the flavor combinations, which I think we get across in the entire series, actually. So it is a little bit of a masterclass, but hopefully not patronizing.
It's not patronizing at all. And actually, I would say it's a show where every episode, this is what I've been doing, you sort of want to watch it twice. Once just once for the joy of it. Because actually, Gok, I realise I'm kind of blowing smoke a bit, but it's because I've loved it so much. You know, you're so funny. Your one line, especially about your dad, I must say, about his size. That's had me in stitches.
He's a very funny man. It's very easy to be funny about my father because he owns the story. Trust me.
I love it though. I love it, and I completely connect. And I've had this lovely insight. So I watch it once just to enjoy it, and then I sort of benchmark. Oh, I'd really like to try that dish, or that looks good. So then I rewatch it to kind of actually follow your instructions. Do you see what I mean? I'm really pleased with it. It's such a good show.
Thank you very much. What was really nice is that last week I did an interview with a journalist, and she had watched the first episode prior to the interview, and in the interview, which was a Skype interview, of course, because we're all working from home at the moment, she'd made the flatbreads, and the feeling that you get from somebody that actually cooks the food that you're talking about is so incredible. Honestly, it's a real gift. And you know, she went on to post on her Instagram about, you know, how versatile they are and how you can freeze them and everything else, and it's so lovely. And so I'm just hoping that everybody feels the same way as you and the same way as her about the show, because I'm genuinely really proud of it, and I'm very proud that I've found the confidence to let my guard down slightly on television, which I don't think I've done in all these years, really, because whenever I'm dressing someone or I'm talking about fashion, it's always about somebody else. It's always about their story. And it has to be, and that's the right thing to do in those situations and in those type of programs. But when it comes to something like this, which is very autobiographical, which is very emotional for me, especially when you're missing your friends and family, that took a huge amount of confidence. I feel very proud about that. And I don't often say that about work. I'm very critical about what I do, and I'm always striving to be better, you know, which is part of my tapestry, really. But this show, I feel very, very proud of it. I feel very confident with it and very comfortable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You really should be. I've loved it, and I'm going to rewatch the series again.
Oh, thank you. So this means the world to me. It really does.
Really, it's genuinely. I mean, listen, you had me at your opening line. I practically grew up in a wok working all hours in my parents' Chinese restaurant. I'm in. This is great. It's funny. It's engaging. You've justified why you're cooking the food. Bring it on. I'm all in.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I hope you continue to enjoy the rest of the series.
I fully intend to. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be given screeners, so I you know, I'll watch it in real time as well.
Absolutely.
I'm well into it. Because, of course, and you're so right, you know, this is a very intimate and personal show for you, whereas something like How to Look Good Naked, of course, which is how you burst onto the scene in the UK's consciousness, you're absolutely right. It can't be a show about you. That would be...
It must never be, like,
Yeah,
a lot of people have said to me over the years, why do you always wear black to work? And it's because I worked out a long time ago. You know, I've been working television for a long, long time now. But I worked out that for me, my role on television is always to bolster the story of somebody else, is always to tell their story. If I'm lucky enough to work with somebody who's generous enough to give their story, then I must never overshadow that. And so, you know, I wear a certain uniform to do that. You know, I behave a certain way, and it has to be about helping that person. And then a few years ago, I started making documentaries and made them about, you know, child abuse, obesity, and, you know, and lots of different things that mean a huge amount to me. And you get to be far more personal with those, because then you're talking about your own experiences and about, you know, how you've developed into a person, and also hopefully helping other people. And then when it comes to a cooking show, it's somewhere in between the two of them, because they are personal stories, because it's the stuff that you love to cook. But then it's not turning around and saying in a kind of top chef kind of restaurant way, which is, no, you know, to get this result, you have to do this, and if you don't do this, it's going to be rubbish. This is home cookery. This is stuff that I feed my friends. This is stuff that I feed my family. This is stuff that reminds me of my friends and family, reminds me of, you know, of great, great moments in my life. And that becomes really personal. And that is like reading out an autobiography, because every single family has recipes that have passed down over the years. Every single one of us have got a fond moment of going over to grandma's house and eating the apple pie, or, you know, the special way that mum makes her roast potatoes, or whatever. All of us have got these. And so we're all connected through food. So to be able to make a TV show where you break down the fourth wall, you connect with the audience, hopefully, and say to them, look, you know, this is what I love about living. This is what I love about life. And, you know, you can forget all your fancy stuff. This is just what I love to do and what I love to share. And it's, you know, it's a very, very special, special moment. And it doesn't come around very often, I have to say, and probably the first time in my life, really.
I love it. I love it. Gok, what's next? Because obviously, you know, this show it's going to explode. People will love it. That's clear.
Thank you.
I'm very confident that the network's going to say, "Come on, Gok, can we do like another 20 episodes or another 30 series or whatever?" Because
in my kitchen.
Yeah. Well, why not? But you know what? Have you got sort of? Are you thinking? Because I know lockdown has revised everything for us. But are you able to sort of jump ahead to the end of the year to next year? Are you thinking what might be a timeline for you?
Yeah, kind of. So I host a fashion show called Say Yes to the Dress on TLC. Mm-hmm. And so we go back into production on that in a few weeks' time. And so that is going to be tricky because we've got all the new COVID guidelines and everything else. And that's going to be quite interesting to do. And then whilst I was in lockdown, similar to Easy Asian, I came up with another food idea that I would like to make. I'm still developing it at the moment. It's unlike anything else I've ever done before. It involves some very close people in my life, let's just put it that way. And so if I can get that off the ground, then that will be the next food project. And actually, I've written two cookbooks, but I'd really like to write another cookbook. One that's slightly older maybe than I've done before and kind of slightly more personal. So yes, I've got things in the pipeline and moving around. I mean, the next big project is Say Yes to the Dress, And you know, and also you know, trying to rebuild. All of us are trying to rebuild, aren't we, at the moment? We're trying to rebuild everything in, you know, because of what's happened this year, and that's taking a lot of focus. I have to say, I don't know if you feel the same way, it's taking a massive amount of effort at the moment, and it's Absolutely. A 24-hour thought, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and we still haven't seen the fallout properly yet about what's going to happen to yeah. the nation, really, have we? It's yeah. we're still treading water.
Yeah, and I have to say though, this does come from the heart. I do think that there is so much positivity that we have to find in this, and I don't think that I'm trying my hardest anyway not to focus in on the restrictions, even though I'm following them, not to focus in on all the stuff that's kind of, you know, very upsetting every single day. I'm trying to find the good stuff as well, because there are little pockets of that, you know, like I said, you know, rekindling friendships and you know all of that stuff, you know, finding ourselves and whatever. So that stuff's very important, because yes. it is such a terrible time, and my heart goes out to so many people that have been devastated by what's been going on.
Yeah, no, I completely echo that, Gok. It's been grim. It might continue to be, but you know, we've just got to keep fighting, yeah. and finding a way forward, I guess.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Gok, I've absolutely loved talking to you. I could chat to you for
a while. Oh, thank you so much. A really, really enjoyable interview. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you. And I stand by the best friend thing. If you ever need anyone to cook for, just give me a yell. You've got my
Andy, number. There is always food going on in my kitchen. So you are more than welcome to come over at any point.
I'm going to hold you to that. I don't know how, but I'm going to.
I hope you do.
Fantastic. Gok, thank you so much.
Take care, my darling.
Huge success with you. And Gok Wan's Easy Asian, it's just wonderful. Find it on D Player. Find it on the Food Network. You've just got to watch it. It's great.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks so much, Gok. You take care. Have a lovely day.
Take care. Bye, darling. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.